Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is a test of the Cabin Country Broadcast System. The broadcasters of your area, in voluntary cooperation with the fishing, hunting, and cabin construction authorities, have developed this system to keep you informed in the event of an outdoors emergency. If this had been an actual emergency, an early start to the smelt run on the Knife River, record numbers of pheasant flushes near French Lake, or a sale on the triple glazed windows and pine paneling at Cross Lake Lumber, the attention signal you just heard would have been followed by official information, news, or instructions. This station, WCCN, serves the greater Cabin Country area. This concludes the test of the Cabin Country Broadcast System. From the glow of St. Paul's number one, welcome to another edition of Cabin Country. Give us the time and we'll take you out of the traffic and away from the levee. Let's find the place where the loons call out among the moonlit waves, where the wind sighs among the Norway pines. Pull up a dock chair, have a sip of your coffee, and get a line in the water. This is Cabin Country. Now here's Bjorn Lloydsted, and I'm Fudd Klugman with another woodland escape. Well, all right, welcome once again to Cabin Country.
Welcome back. Yes,
Fudd Klugman.
And I am Bjorn Lloydsted.
We've got a relatively nice summer evening here at the end of June, and, well, as we can sometimes hear, summertime at near the Oakdale Studios, a lawnmower in the background.
Absolutely.
Neighbors.
Keeping that lawn.
Keeping the lawn. Actually, you know, we've had some very dry weeks recently, and the lawnmowers were silent because it was so dry.
Perhaps the neighbor will take some shots of his final product and turn it into "Look at that lawn."
Look at that lawn.
Right.
Get in on the running for this
yes.
week's star prize.
Right, right.
Which
well,
has yet to be determined. But Fudd, you're telling me you just got back from the fabulous Gull River location.
That's right.
Anxious to hear.
Went up again with Molly and the girls, and the weather wasn't too bad. I was all ready to grab that little window unit air conditioner because
oh, yes.
I'm afraid I'm all about comfort, folks. And
Cabin Country with just a touch of modern comfort.
Yes, that's right. But it was just fine, and I didn't see any geese around.
Nary a goose.
At least our property. I think later during the trip, I'd seen that they were, well, carousing in the yard. Couple of lots down.
Couple lots down.
So thankfully they weren't in our yard.
Not
pooping.
Too many humans. No golden retriever.
Right, rolling around and getting smudged with
fragrant.
Oh, it's awful.
It is certainly a thing.
I think one of the kind of the most exciting moments though is that I had this thought to check my dad's tackle box.
Yes,
for the long lost chipmunk lure.
The chipmunk. The jitterbug.
And sure enough, I opened it up, and right on the top tray.
It was waiting for you.
There it was. So I thought, wait a minute. In fact, it even looked smaller than I remembered. Is this the same lure?
Shrunken with age.
That I lost? So I took a snapshot of it with the phone and texted it to my dad and said, give me a call. So he he did, and I asked him if, you know, do you remember when you got this or found it? And he said he didn't remember. And I said, I think it's my long-lost chipmunk lure.
It's the chipmunk.
And he said, well, that's fine. Yeah, you can have it. I can't remember where I got it, so it's yours. So, I I think that was it.
Tearful homecoming.
Now I won't have to go on eBay and debate whether or not to spend $120 for one just for posterity and the memory of it. If you don't remember the story, I bought it for 10 cents at a garage sale when I was probably 9, 10 years old.
There you go.
And even had the box way back when. And
oh, wow.
I'm sure I could be asking $120 for it on eBay if I had the box, but... No, that's all right. I'm just going to keep it. Maybe I'll cast it out when we head up ourselves, Bjorn,
right,
next
couple
week.
Couple weeks here, next week.
That's right.
Perhaps that chipmunk jitterbug will take to the water.
Right.
See what it
See if
comes
it actually can. I mean, I never have caught anything.
I'll just remind you to make sure your leader is tied tight, Fudd.
So, we will. But anyways, the mention of the geese reminds me of a birding book that I had gotten last... for my birthday last December, just before Christmas.
Indeed.
And it was an unusual birding book, one that I opened it up and started reading, and I laughed as hard as I can remember laughing in years. It just, I read them aloud to my wife and girls who got the book for me, and they, I think, delighted. I don't know if it was they were laughing at me laughing so hard or the descriptions themselves. This is a book entitled The Field Guide to Dumb Birds of North America.
Indeed.
And perhaps a number of our listeners are already familiar with it. It's by an author, illustrator, artist, Matt Crocht, in the Seattle area, up in Washington State. And, oh my God, it's beautiful. So I thought, why don't I try to give Matt a call or reach him, you know, by some kind of social media.
Yeah, reach out.
And sure enough, he answered and said, "Sure, I'd love to be on your podcast. That sounds great." And I thought, "Oh my gosh, this guy, I mean, this book I think is already been labeled a national bestseller, I think, on Amazon."
Wow.
So it's getting out there. But I did ask Stan Tequila if he'd heard about it. I just emailed him and he said, "No, I haven't. Sounds funny though." So I wasn't sure. I thought, well, maybe a true naturalist might take umbrage about all this profanity use and the, and the language to describe. Because the book is like it's written by somebody who just like hates birds.
Has had enough.
Had enough. But obviously, Matt has done a lot of research and knows quite a bit about the birds. So even though it's funny and sometimes profane, it's actually quite accurate.
Oh, it's outstanding.
And his drawings, again, look like the angry scribblings of a bored art student or something while he's on a long Zoom class or something like that.
Right. The timing of this seems wonderfully ironic, Fudd, because we all appreciate the beauty and the wonder of a huge V of Canada geese, you know, flying
right.
southward
in the autumn.
Autumn mornings, autumn evenings. A beautiful bird. At the same time, our listenership will vouch for the fact that there's been a bit of an ongoing struggle between the Klugman estate and a flock of the Canada geese that love your dock, love your front yard,
yes,
love to offer things to your dogs to roll around in. It's they're omnipresent, and as a guy who likes to run / cycle around some of the lakes here in the greater Twin Cities area, you have to be careful when you see
right
a flock of them on the shore of a lake. You give them a wide berth.
Yes,
you know, wild or tame. I just remember my farmer grandparents talking about, don't let them pinch you.
Bonk.
You will never forget that pinch. Oh, my goodness. That's a big bird with a lot of power. So it's ironic that we love the Canada goose, a beautiful bird. At the same time, in the last 2-3 decades, have become almost a borderline pest.
Right.
In parts of cabin country.
Invasive.
So it's interesting that Matt has a great section on birds just like the Canada goose. And the artwork is outstanding and done with kind of a frenetic passion.
Oh, yes.
The birds are accurate. You know what it is when you look at it. They're well done.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
no question. This man's an artist. But with a kind of a innate fury.
Yeah.
he's looking at the other side of things. Like perhaps Matt was met by a goose at some point who said, that's the back of your knee, and this is my bill.
Bonk.
Come here. Crunch. You know, it's beautiful. And so what a perfect time for this interview. And
before we start that, let's just give you a taste of what the book contains. I'll open up to the Canada Goose.
Well, here we go.
But first, folks, we have to warn you that some of the language used in tonight's episode may not be suitable for those who are offended.
Yes.
We'll try to artfully avoid some of the sting of some of it.
We'll bring in some sound effects to
But let me read you out of the, and this is under the, he's got his book sectioned on different types of birds, and this is under the section floaters, sandbirds, and dork legs. And this is the goddamned Canada Goose. Common name, Canada Goose. Thanks a lot, Canada. These fuckers are often considered a pest species. Why? Because of their depredation of crops, their noise, their droppings, aggressive behavior, and habit of begging for food in urban parks, not to mention that incessant honking, and their long, stupid necks. Basically, everything about these geese just makes you want to choke them. Goose tips. Feeding the geese at the park? Be aware that they can become overly aggressive in large groups. If you have to fight, don't let them surround you. Keep moving and try to take them on individually or in small groups. So that's just one of several uniquely described birds in the book. But why don't we get the artist and author?
Absolutely.
And have them explain about how all this came about.
How did this come to be?
Well, welcome, nice. Welcome to Cabin Country, Matt.
You. Yes.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be in Cabin Country.
Now, as we, did I hear right that you actually have relatives in Minnesota?
Mm-hmm. Well, they're now in Wisconsin. They've moved the way across the border by about 35 miles.
Because you said Stillwater, right? Stillwater there.
Stillwater. So growing up, my family, my parents are from Iowa, mm-hmm. and then they moved to the Seattle area, which is where I was born and raised. But my dad was a college professor, and so every summer he had the summer off, and we would travel back to the Midwest to visit relatives, and it was usually about a month to a 6-week trip that both began and ended with an incredibly long car ride because they always wanted to drive. So we would pile me and my brother and my mom into the 67 Chrysler Newport.
Nice.
And no air conditioning, just barrel across the country. And we always had to leave at like 3:47 in the morning to get milk scrub before and then we knew we were gonna stop for gas in Butte. And so it was kind of this rhythm that we had every year. And so we would go visit, and we had a lot of relatives in Iowa and some in Minnesota. My dad's mom and her husband and family lived in Stillwater. And so we would always make a trip there, and I loved playing with my cousins there. And so I think it's a little bit of we spent so much time in the Midwest that it was kind of like my summertime backyard.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I was a teenager before I knew how pleasant summer could be,
right?
Because we didn't go to the Midwest.
Matt, you live in the Seattle area, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Right in the Puget Sound region, which is the Puget Sound is like this huge, crazy waterway. There's like 1,300 miles of coastline, and it's all connected to the Salish Sea. So right up along the Washington coast and British Columbian coast there.
Absolutely.
Let me just here's a bird we have in common, and I'm going to have Bjorn read the short description you have for this bird that we've all seen in our backyards.
Indeed.
If
I may hear the shit-headed cowbird.
What's its common name?
The common name is the brown-headed cowbird. These shitheads are the worst. They lay eggs like it's going out of style. Seriously, like one every day, all summer long. The female finds the nest of some other bird. She throws out one of their eggs and out of the nest. That's fucked up. Then she lays some of her own in its place and flies off laughing. The shit-headed cowbird. And a beautiful illustration there too, Matt, of the cowbird apparently laughing as it sits on a log. And it's just dumb.
I just laid my eggs in some other poor f***er's nest. And
that's right. And you get to raise them. Goodbye. Outstanding.
Well, tell us about your artist journey, your history, your beginnings as an artist.
Trained as an artist. How did that go?
I started out before I was trained as a kid you know, all I wanted. They had to make me go outside and play, because what I really wanted to do was draw pictures and write stories.
Sure.
You know, I went to a fabulous Lutheran liberal arts school here in Washington.
Sure.
And loved creative writing, and I loved art, and had trouble choosing between them, and I was too lazy to have a double major. So I ended up with more credits in the visual arts. And so that's the route that I took. But I always really love the written word and love wordplay.
Yeah.
You know, I eventually became a professional designer, because that seemed like it was kind of like art, and it is kind of like art, but it's different. And then I left that a few years ago and have been writing the books and making the funnies. And I've realized that I've kind of come full circle in my life back to the most sort of joyous time, which as a child was drawing pictures and writing stories about them. And so that's what I've done in this book. So it basically allowed me to combine the three things that I enjoy most, which is writing, drawing, and not being serious. So
it's almost like you have to come full circle and do however many years worth of the quote unquote real job our parents used to always tell us about, and make your mark, quote unquote,
yeah,
and go back to what you love in the first place, which is,
yeah,
you know, it just seems like that's what we've always heard, you know. You got to do what you love and love what you do.
Right.
So how in the world did I end up doing this? You know, not podcasting, of course. I love this, but still waiting for the residuals to show up. Don, you could probably get rid of that at some point. But
well, what I love, you know, all of the birds in this book are illustrated by Matt. They're all like, how did I describe it? To me, they look like they're the angry doodlings of a bored college art student or something. And you're just in class and you're just drawing this thing. The thing of it is, what's cool is that they're all anatomically correct, you know, as the bird shapes are all accurate. Yeah.
But that makes it sound like something that, like, it's not anatomically correct implies that I've got, you just want everybody to know that they won't see that. If that's what they're looking for, there's probably some weird sites on the internet for them, but
it's a G-rated.
I tried to be pretty accurate. So when I did the first drawing, it was a doodle that I did in between meetings in that design job I had, and I had seen a bird, but I couldn't get a picture of it, which frustrated me. And I was thinking about that, and I was doodling that bird. And I guess, you know, I showed this doodle to a friend after the meeting, and he said to me, looks like you were angry when you drew that. So you queued up on that. And so that became sort of the theme. And we got laughing about the idea of this guy who draws birds because he hates them. And it was that sort of in joke, and from that came this whole idea, this concept of this person who's obsessed with birds, but not in a good way.
Right, yeah,
right. Well, and the descriptions are so wonderful too. I particularly am a big fan of the goddamn Canada goose. they're omnipresent, you know. And I mean, FUD, you've spent a fair bit of time,
yeah,
in real time and on the show talking about ways to get these things off
your
property.
It's a current nightmare up at our cabin on the Gull River. They're just, in fact,
how are those decoys working out for you?
Well, they're sort of working. I've got a new report, so this is brand new for our listeners, while we have Matt here, that my dad was just up at the cabin last week, and he said that he filled a 5-gallon bucket half filled with goose shit. So they came onto the property in spite of the two swan decoys. But here's what he said. They didn't come up on the land and poop near where the swans were. They came up on the other side of the dock, on the other side of where my boat is on a lift, and they came up there and pooped all over that area. So he said he took one of my other... Last year, I made these fake fishing lure kind of things with big eyes and... you know, this tinsely kind of stuff.
Mylar tassels.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Mylar tassels. Yeah. To, you know,
moving,
it's got to be
breeze,
flashy and
the
big eye. And it really didn't work. But he moved one of them just in case it might over to where he saw that they were getting in. So they are, in spite of the decoys, they're still there crapping. And we're going to have to take care of these goddamn geese.
Well, and I think they're thanking you for the interactive,
yeah,
you know, displays that you put up to attract,
yeah,
their favorite.
Maybe they think it's a theme park or something. They're just like,
one thing I love,
that,
Matt, is I'm just leafing through. I mean, the drawings are outstanding. The descriptions, of course, are hilarious. But I As a guy who's read all kinds of birding guides, and I love them. You know, I love to know what they're all about and where do they live and what are their patterns. And you get to various chapters in the different books and you'll see things like, well, here are the upland game birds. All this kind of, I just came across a new chapter simply entitled Fuckers. Here are some birds that just at their base are just plain assholes.
Right.
Well, some of these have some real charming aspects, and in this chapter, just the ones that are
they're just plain fuckers.
Miscreants of the foul world. Yeah, this is outstanding.
When I was putting the book together, you know, sounds like you read plenty of bird guides, and of course, I grew up on them too, and you know, Sibley's and Audubon and all of those, and they're organized different ways, often by like a bird grouping or whatever. And what I tried to do in this book was organize them by what kind of bird they were deep down inside.
Yeah. Well, I'll just give the listeners here a quick section 2, the birds, typical birds, backyard assholes, hummingbirds, weirdos and flycatchers, egotists and show-offs, of course, the aforementioned fuckers, floaters, sandbirds and dork legs, and of course, murder birds. Now, would that be birds you'd like to murder, or these are the murderers of the bird world, or possibly a combination of the two? Or
well, possibly both, although it's primarily birds of prey.
Okay, sure.
Birds that are basically, if you look at how their nature has designed them, they're just efficient killing machines.
Right.
That's all they're there for.
Right.
So.
Right. That's outstanding.
Well, yeah, so I was trying to compliment you on anatomical correctness with those, but they are, at the same time, very funny, angry drawings, line drawings, and it's hilarious. I also like the, sometimes there are names that are crossed out and a new name put over it and stuff like that. It's just...
But the beauty of this is you could identify these birds from Matt's drawings. I mean, this is absolutely,
you take one look at the white-breasted butt nugget, you know exactly what it is. Better known as the white-breasted nuthatch. Plenty of those.
The bird that spends most of its time in your backyard hanging upside down.
Oh, that's...
It's beautiful.
I'll tell you one of my secrets. Two of them, actually. Really, so the initial drawing, I wanted to, when that guy said it looks so angry, I wanted to keep that. And so I had to put these, first, you're right. I think you need to know how to draw something before you learn the right way to draw it wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
It just sounds like a jerk who's been to art school and is like, well, you can't just draw something bad. First, you have to know how to draw good, then you're allowed to draw bad. But I wanted them to be recognizable as the actual bird, and I wanted them to be enjoyable as a drawing, but I also wanted it to have that sort of, anger, like this sort of author character it's my name. I am the author, but it's sort of written as this sort of angry character. I'm not actually that angry, and I don't actually hate birds that much. My relationship with birds is complicated, but I wanted to sort of retain that anger. And so in order to do that, I really limited myself. I gave myself a time limit on each bird that I was strict about when I was doing it.
Right.
And I did it in pen. Well, I used pencil, pen, colored pencil, highlighter. I limited myself to office supplies.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
It made sense to me that, in fact, all of those were originally drawn on Post-it notes.
Oh, really?
So even better.
An enormous amount of work for me. Actually, more work than doing the drawings was then blowing them up to a larger size and cleaning them up and taking out the Post-it note yellow and all of that stuff. Because when I started, I didn't know I was making a book. But so they were drawn with ballpoint pen and I used pencils and I had highlighters. And of course, I'm art director, so I've got tons of pens. But I tried to really keep it as few things and limit it to non-art tools, I guess.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And then I tried to do it really fast, and I did it hard because I wanted this to feel angry. So when I would color something in, I would just, there are a couple of them where I actually drew through the paper where there's a hole in the middle of a bird because I'm just scraping it so hard.
Your great blue heron looks like it was done with a certain amount of dare I say, anger. Yeah. Yeah, it's like this.
Yeah, the great blue moron.
The great blue moron. Yeah. Yes.
One of the biggest tricks of the whole book was that the more that I did this, the more birds that I drew, that I inevitably got better at it.
Yeah.
Which, so I had to fight getting too good at it. And actually, with the second book, which is coming out in October, you know, like I've drawn so many birds that it's almost, it's like you can sort of see it evolve. And sure. I had to decide at some point, like, do I go back and try to draw them less good, which is almost harder?
Yeah.
Or do I just say, well, this guy has just drawn another 60 birds. And so there's a little bit of an evolution and, you know, it's a lot the same style, but it's, you know, you can see the artwork, you know, evolve a little bit.
Where else can we find you online if you want to find your drawings and stuff?
The dumb bird stuff. I have an Instagram account that's at Dumb Birds Field Guide, I think. Okay. And but if you just search for Field Guide to Dumb Birds on there, or search for
easy
my
to
name,
find.
There's my own personal account, which is kind of like me as an author. And I've posted some other weird drawings and stuff. And it's like whatever, you can follow me there. And I do have a Matt Kroc Art Instagram account, which is I haven't posted anything to for a while, but you know, I studied fine art, and so I'm actually really interested in contemporary painting, contemporary abstract figurative, mm-hmm. things like that. So that's something that I'm playing with, but it's sort of behind, I haven't posted a lot recently because it's kind of happening behind the scenes. I'm learning how to juggle being a best-selling author and a non-selling artist.
Yeah.
So, but I've got, now that I'm sort of fully invested in this life, I'm sort of figuring that out. Plus I bought a fixer, right before the lockdown. So I've got I have an awful lot of projects around the house.
I bet. Yeah.
Oh,
I hope you don't end up where I'm at, Matt, where I've been painting, for years now, and the collection just continues growing in the basement. There's just these stacks of canvases sitting there, and I got word from my beloved the other day that maybe you could just start giving these away, or maybe whitewashing them and doing over, you know, reuse the canvases. I'm like, oh God,
so supportive.
Really? Okay. I guess it would be kind of freeing to some extent. I got to go back to this drawing here, the great blue moron. It's beautiful. I mean, it's definitely a great blue heron, and I love the fact, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm sensing there's some real rage here in the lining of it. But I love the fact that he's got a fish that's almost too big for his mouth that he's attempting to swallow, and that bulging eyeball is almost like, yeah. I'm looking at it going, well, this great blue moron has bitten off much more than it can chew. It's standing in its watery home, choking on this giant fish. Yeah. It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. I mean, I see here in your drawings a lot of, like, they're very well done and like almost like drawings from the field. You know, like, I'm doing this fast because it's in front of me, and you get the idea. I don't have a ton of time here. And at the same time, this thing really pisses me off.
that's basically the idea. Yeah. I think you nailed it. I feel like, I guess I did my job, because that's exactly what I wanted
right,
to come through.
Right. No, it's beautiful. You can appreciate.
For validating.
Absolutely. Appreciate the bird for what it is and what it looks like, and you're not going to miss it. And at the same time, you can sense, like, and here's a trait about this thing that I really dislike. Look at that idiot, you know, standing there. And you get to the back, and some of these maps you've put in are just outstanding. And as a guy in public education, I'm like, man, I've been handed in a few things that look very similar. But the listing is just wonderful. Like, well, here's where you're going to find all the boring birds, and these dummies move this way for no particular reason. It's outstanding.
See, it's more than, I mean, it's a true field guide and bird book, because it's not just a, you know, few familiar birds and hilarious descriptions.
It's very inclusive.
I mean, you're very thorough about, like, well, if you have an interest, you know, how to keep a notebook or a field journal, bird feeders, and how to make your own bird feeder. I mean, it's very thorough. And of course, that sort of angry sense of humor.
Yeah.
Like, well, if you must, you know, if you're obsessed with these goddamn things, you know. So that's what's very cool.
Thank you.
Well, we have a lot more to talk with Matt Kroc about, so don't go too far. We'll be right back after these important messages.
Celebrating the 4th of July, our nation's birthday. What a better place to do it than the Great North Woods. Fun, fireworks, and fanfare. And who better to celebrate it with than good old Lloyd?
Well, it's great to be with you here in the Gull River for the annual 4th of July pontoon boat parade. Everybody's got their pontoons decorated to celebrate our country's freedom. Oh, it just makes me proud. And thanks again for letting me be here to start you all rolling. And I think it'd be fitting if I started with the Star Spangled Banner. Oh, say can you see? What? Oh, they're taking off. Be careful out there, folks.
And why not stick around and join good old Lloyd as he thinks back to some of his fondest memories from 4th of July past.
Standing up here this evening, I'm filled with so much pride. Proud to be an American and looking out amongst all you and getting ready to see... Are we going to start those already? Hey! We weren't supposed to start yet. I'm supposed to talk about my memories. Jeez, that was coming right at me!
Sit down, Lloyd.
Even on the 4th of July, that's Lloyd. Good old Lloyd.
Previously on the Cabin Country Outdoors Agents.
Officer Torgerson.
Red.
Big Bear.
Trash.
Cans.
All over the driveway.
Bag.
No, that can't be good. Betty.
Double bag.
Stayed late on Monday.
You had your coffee?
Forgot about it.
Trash.
Came in.
Big Bear.
Golf clubs. Loped off.
Shined in.
Big.
Too close for comfort.
It was a Big Bear.
Big.
We want him gone, Torgerson.
Red.
Tonight, episode 2, No Honor Among Thieves.
Upon returning to the office, I was struck with an idea. I called Red Benson and told him that two runs at his garbage cans would probably mean a third wasn't far off. He should put the cans in his garage overnight, every night. Unless he was willing to be part of an agency sting operation. Red was interested in being part of the solution here, and he added that he'd report in for his neighbor Jim Galligan. I asked for clarification, and Red told me that Galligan had also had his can torn apart over the weekend. They just talked about it now, and Galligan confirmed that his cans, too, had been hit. Jim Galligan's lake place was three lots down from the Bensons. Now there was a pattern. This was a newcomer. A newcomer with a taste for high-end trash. We at the agency realize that cabin owners and cabin builders are moving into a new neighborhood when they break ground, a neighborhood originally owned by wild animals. Ideally, lake homeowners will learn how to live alongside their wild neighbors. This is not usually the case, however. In this case, the new bad actor neighbor appeared to be a black bear. Now we had multiple complaints about the animal. It was time to make a decision on how to proceed. I knocked on Captain Ike Martinez's office door. Skipper, can I have a word with you?
Go ahead, Torgy. I'm going to guess you have a question about the bear out of Clamshell Lake.
You're a mind reader, Captain. These people want that bear gone, but I've gotten a read off them that they'd like the bear relocated. Nothing more. I'm not going to be real popular out in Clamshell if I roll out the .357, and they probably won't be okay with a rifle and a tranquilizer dart. You sit at the helm, Skip. What do you suggest in this case?
This situation calls for our new bear barrel, Torgy. This will be its first use. If the Bensons are okay with the idea, we'll bring the baited barrel out to their lot around early evening and get it locked down and ready to go. Then we'll clear out. By morning, we should have the bear ready for relocation. If we take it far enough north and onto a plot of state-owned land, the Clamshell group should be free of their new neighbor with no one getting hurt.
I'm guessing that as the agent that took the original call, Skip, I'm in on helping run this plan past the neighborhood. If they agree, do we have anyone who's trained to keep watch on that new trap after it's set?
Not yet, Torgy. It's not real tough to figure out. We bait the trap and day-old donuts and then set a man at a distance to keep watch. It springs with plenty of power, Torgy. The bear can't get out of that trap once it's sprung. No one has trained on it yet, but it's an easy job.
It's all right with you, Skip. I'll sit watch on that trap.
That's funny, Torgy.
Skip?
You're just the man I was going to suggest.
After talking with the Bensons and Jim Galligan, we had the okay to place the barrel trap. It was a large culvert-style affair that had steel bars on one end and a powerful steel trap door on the front. There was plenty of room for an adult bear in that trap. I picked up 2 dozen day-old donuts from Reed's Bakery, and I stopped by the Sportsman's Cafe for some solidified bacon fat. That ought to do the trick with this hungry bear. Bacon grease and day-old blueberry crullers. Show me a bear that could resist that. As I drove the truck towards Clamshell, I had visions of placing the donuts in the trap to the sounds of the Gentle Ben theme song. I'd better be less cavalier. This was an adult bear, after all. Generally speaking, most cabin-goers don't have much to fear from the black bears, but the creature is still capable of creating some serious damage to just about anything. Get big and they'll run. I revisited my outdoors agent training concerning black bears. Bang pots and yell. Stand up as tall as you can get and show no fear. Fair enough. I was going to try to stay out of sight and let the grease and donuts do the work. Once this bear was trapped, we'd move on to the relocation process.
Be sure to join Officer Torgi Torgerson in the next exciting episode of Real Adventures of the CCOA, right here on Cabin Country. And now back to Bjorn Fudd and tonight's special guest, Matt Crocht. I wanted to hear, Matt, and this is in the introduction to the book, but tell us that story when you were in fourth grade and you had a particular assignment that you had to fulfill.
So, formative years.
Like all great villains, there's an origin story.
Yes.
I look back on this super fondly, but I mean, at the time it seemed awful, but I had this wonderful, amazing fourth grade teacher. In my school was just big enough that there were 2 fourth grade classes. Actually, in most schools, it would have been 1 big fourth grade class, sure. But for some reason they split it into 2 smaller classes, which was great. Smaller class size, whatever.
Right.
So, I knew everybody in fourth grade, but we had 2 different teachers and they were both really into bird watching, whatever they called it back then. I don't think they called it birding yet. They just called it bird watching.
Sure.
You might've called it ornithology. Anyway, they both were super into it and they both were super competitive. So there was this good natured competition between the 2 classes.
Right.
And we went on these joint field trips, but it was like, whose students can count the most bald eagles on the Skagit River, you know, and they got really, you know, like wound up about it. And the kids didn't care. We were just like, we're cold and it's wet and it's hard looking at eagles. But so I got introduced. It was really, I was a kid. As I mentioned before, I grew up going to the Midwest, spending my summers, and I ran around barefoot with the cousins. And so I think every kid is kind of a naturalist.
Sure.
They just don't know the correct names of things yet. You know, they've drawn a picture of a bug because it's cool. But it was sort of my first introduction to like real naturalism and ornithology and the actual academic study of nature. And I kind of loved it. I mean, I was a nerdy little precocious kid and I was like, this is great. This is amazing. And so it was also like, she assigned, for the end of the year, we were assigned to do a report and it was a homework report. And this is like in fourth grade at that time. Anyway, it's like, kids now, I think they just give them homework like right out of the gate. But
yeah.
This was sort of the first thing where it's like, you have to go do this on your own. We're not going to sit in class. You can't ask questions or whatever. So you had to pick a bird and then write a report on it. And I really, really wanted to do the black-capped chickadee.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I love that bird. And also, they're everywhere.
Right.
They're just everywhere. And they're easy to hear because they have that really distinctive call and they're easy to spot. And I just thought they were the coolest thing. And I was like, I am so doing that. And so she went around the room and asked each kid what they wanted to do. And this girl who sat to the left of me and got called on first was like, black-capped chickadee.
Oh, no.
And she said, okay. And I was like, oh, well, I want to do that too. And she's like, no, you can't do that too. You have to do a different bird. And this, which didn't make sense to me as a kid. It's like, who cares if we both write a report on the black-capped chickadee?
Right,
you know,
right.
Maybe mine will be better than hers,
right.
Probably. But so I couldn't pick that. And I didn't think I needed an alternate. So I had nothing in mind. So she said, well, why don't you do the golden crown kinglet? And I'm like, fine, whatever. and I don't know why she assigned that to me. Maybe she was irritated with me because that bird, I mean, they're tiny. They're like the size of your thumb and they're colored like, I mean, they have a little crown on them, but I mean, the males do anyway,
sure.
The golden crown kinglet. It's gold, and sometimes there's a little red there too. It's a really pretty little bird, but they're like, they flit around super fast. They like to stay up high normally in, you know, coniferous forests. They like know where a fourth grader is ever going to be. And, you know, and I thought like this, my whole, I thought for sure, like, this is how you do it, right? I was like the Indiana Jones of birds, right? Like the way that you would study a bird is you take your, you know, I probably three ring binder and your pencil and your binoculars, and you go out in the woods and you watch this bird, and then you note its behavior, and you, I mean, you're studying it, right?
Right. Field notes.
And you, good luck with a golden pelican. you cannot find them. And I, it's like the kind of thing where you're looking through your binoculars and you're, oh, that's one. No, I think that's a pine cone. And you know, meanwhile, you're a fourth grader, you're getting, your shoes are wet, you're getting bit by bugs, it's cold out because the report was over, we're supposed to write it over Christmas vacation.
Oh,
so
boy.
As all great, you know, early, you know, kids tend to do is you don't do the report until the last minute. So
absolutely.
Now it's like November and I'm like, oh, I got to get out in the woods now. I got to get out in some fields and some woods and find this bird. Also, I had no knowledge of like where to look for them.
Right.
To me, it's like, well, birds are outside in trees. So you just start looking there. And so I tramped around all the local fields and woods and went on special trips with bird watching groups and did all this stuff. And I never saw one and it drove me nuts. And all I did was get wet and cold. And then came the end of Christmas vacation and I was, you know, admitted to my mom. I'm like, I have this bird report due in like 2 days. And she's like, well, I guess you better write it. And I was like, well, I can't because I didn't see the bird. And she just went over to the family set of Encyclopedia Britannica, pulled out, you know, the volume and handed it to me and said, you can go to the library and get a book on birds too. And so it was crushing to me because I had this big idea in my head that I'm going to go out, you know, within like my pith helmet and like discover something new about this bird that nobody's ever heard of before. And it all revolved around seeing it. Like it didn't occur. It's like, why would you write about something that's already been written about? I need to go look at something and do it. So I begrudgingly wrote this report and put it in this, you know, one of those, you know, Brad binders.
Oh, yes.
Where you do the three ring punch and then the Brad's close.
Yeah.
And then there's a little area on the front that you can write on. And I think mine was titled Bird Report. And I turned it in and I got, I don't know what it was, satisfactory or whatever. They didn't really, I don't think they did ABC at that age, but you know, it was C minus work at best. And I knew I could have done better. And it was like it shook me to the core. It was my first brush with real report writing and academia, and which I assumed I would be great at. And I just stunk the room. it was bad. And so, well, so to sort of bring the story full circle, this is back in, I think, 2017. Now I'm in Seattle and I'm at this local park that's right on the water. It's beautiful. This trail walks along the Puget Sound there. And it's, I think it was either New Year's Day or the day after. And my wife and I are taking a walk. It's crisp golden day. You know, it's cold and you can see your breath and the sun is shining and all the, you know, grass is golden. And I look over to my left on the non-water side and I see something flitting around, and sure enough, it's a golden-crowned kinglet. Like the first one I've ever, you know, 47 years old, I've never seen one in my life in the wild, and there it is. And I like just had this immediate like burst of like, this is my chance for redemption. I gotta prove that I've seen this bird. And I'm like fumbling to get my phone out of my pocket and I get it out and I get my gloves off, so because it's an iPhone and I'm trying to do the thing. And you know, my wife's like, what? And I'm like, shh, quiet. Oh, Craig Kinglet. You know, she doesn't know the story, so she has no idea.
Right.
Like I'm just freaking out because there's a bird next to me, and so she's quiet. And I'm trying to snap a picture of it, and this thing, this little son of a bitch, would not stop flitting around. It, like, it, every time my phone, just before it could focus, it would move. And so I spent like 5 minutes, and I got some blurry pictures. The best one is in the introduction of the book. And you know, if you look, you can barely make it. If I hadn't circled it and written the name next, you would just assume it was a blurry leaf.
Yeah, you can't really see it.
Yeah, exactly my point, right? So the damn thing you know, it foiled me again, you know. So I still, and so then it was a few days later that I was doodling, and I came up with this angry doodle, and my friend said, "Looks like you were mad when you drew that." And so, yeah, that's basically it. All started because I had a great fourth grade teacher who pushed me to do something new, and I failed academically at it, and basically got pissed off about it, and apparently hung on to that anger all these years and didn't realize it until I had to write a book about it.
We have to read then the Golden Crown Dumb Shit, as it appears in your book, common name Golden Crown Kinglet. This dumb little shit just hops all over the place, in the trees, in the grass, in the bushes, everywhere nonstop. It can't sit still for even one goddamn second. So you could maybe take a picture of it that's not blurry or obscured by twigs. That's why I had to draw this little fuck instead. He has a stupid yellow stripe on his head. And that's it. So there you go. It's the angry author of the book is not really who you are. It's almost like a character wrote the book. So you really don't have that much anger, but was there some catharsis in drawing these?
And... Oh, yeah. I mean, it's fun. And I mean, like, let's just be honest. Swearing is fun. Yes. It's fun as fuck.
Yeah. I'm not supposed to be doing this.
Yeah. You know, which is why so many teens and preteens love this book and their parents hate me for it. Right. my nephews loved it and my sister-in-law is still mad. But but I feel like this, like as an uncle, that's 100% my job, right? Like yes. Their kids need to learn it somewhere. That's so right. It's a ton of fun to write. Yeah, there's maybe some catharsis, but not so much against birds as it just gives me an opportunity to be snarky. And like, that's an element of me. Like, I think my sense of humor, I can be a little sarcastic. I can be a little snarky. And, you know, this felt great because I wouldn't write a book like this about people. Because it just feels mean,
yeah,
you know?
Mean spirited, sure.
I told somebody, I was talking to somebody about writing, and we were talking about if you're doing humor, you always want to punch up. And they're like, well, perfect, because birds are up there. And so I feel too guilty, you know, I don't want to hurt people's feelings. And the great thing is that birds cannot read. So
that we know.
we know. Although, if you take a look at my back deck right now, it's quite possible that some of the local birds have learned to read because they're really bombing it. You know? I just stained it and immediately they're like, oh, cool, new color.
Here you go. Here's what I thought of the book.
Yeah.
I was going to ask if any serious ornithologists or you've heard from anybody who took any offense.
Taking umbrage.
With the book.
How dare you?
That was a concern of mine when I first... You know, my publisher was like, you know, let's do this. And I'm like, I don't know, though. I'm going to, like, piss off all the serious birders. And but I already had some. It was interesting when I started the blog and I got a bunch of followers and people started coming out of the woodwork. And they're like, I'm working in the field. I care for injured raptors. And this is the funniest thing that I've ever read. So I think most serious birders, at least who have reached out to me, they don't have a problem with the humor at all. They actually think it's funny because I think there is this tension. I think everybody, like if you're into birding and there are probably some other things and who knows, maybe I'll write books about those things. But if you're part of a community where there's like some real passion around something, but you know, deep down inside, like a lot of people take this way more seriously than they probably should, or just too like wrapped up in like, you know, all high and mighty about it, that like somebody needs to take the piss out of that. And that's like, that's my job. Basically. I think that's what I've decided, you know, now that I'm not going to be in the corporate world anymore. I'm going to take the wind out of, you know, puffed up people's sails. So I think that there is this thing where they it's almost cathartic for them to be able to laugh at themselves or probably in many cases at their colleagues, I'm guessing. But yes, students love it. I have had some bad feedback. There are the few people have, and it's not very much, but it always comes with a 1-star Amazon review. Yeah. And it's always a variation on this story. I bought your book thinking it was going to be some good, clean humor about birds. And let me interject here. I don't know why they would think that. but apparently they bought it just based on the title and didn't look at any of the content. Okay. And then it goes on to say something like, and I gave it as a gift to my husband / father-in-law / somebody. And their birthday was ruined. And now, and I had to apologize. This is, the F word is not funny. Swearing is not funny, and your book is not funny. One stuck. And it is funny, because it's like, I mean, if you look at the ratings, and I'm not hung up on, I just want people to enjoy it. I don't really care what the ratings are, but like, it's you know, 2,000 five-star ratings, and then like one lady right. who had to apologize to her husband, who apparently can't handle the F word, and his whole birthday. And I'm just like, wow, my little book ruined your whole entire year. That's cool. But those are actually my favorite reviews. I get a kick out of them, and I think they've actually helped my sales, because I think anybody with an actual sense of humor right. reads something like that and they go, oh, I have to read this book.
Right. Yeah.
And I think it's helped me more than, because I know they're just like, I'm mad and I'm going to, you take your one star and that'll show you. And it's like, hey, thanks. You probably just got me 100 more sales. So.
That is hilarious.
But I don't, you know, I try not to take it seriously. It's not for everybody. I don't, you know, recommend it to elderly nuns. Actually, it's for anybody with a sense of humor. And, you know, I don't know. I grew up reading a lot, and I always felt that, like, you shouldn't be afraid of words, and I don't talk that way a lot normally in normal day-to-day conversation. Sure. I like to slip an F-bomb in for effect. I mean, I think if you use it all, it's like a highlighter.
Yeah.
If you highlight every word on the page, it's pointless. But right. you know, if you use it to effect, I mean, it's just part of writing, you know, and the next book I write might not have any swearing in it. Right. It's unlikely, but
I did email our local naturalist Stan Tequila here. He's got hundreds of books on birds, on
trees,
edible plants, trees.
Fish.
He's kind of the big man here, and all over. You know, he's got animals and birds of all kinds of states. So I just wanted to email him and say, have you heard of this book by Matt Crocht? You know, the Field Guide to Dumb Birds of North America. And he just emailed back that I haven't heard of it. It sounds funny though, because I was wondering if. I thought maybe a friend of his would say, like, have you seen this book? You know, he's making fun of what, you know, hardworking naturalists do. But I think obviously he gets it. I think most people do.
Humor. Yeah, he'd appreciate it.
In fact, as I did order one of these books for my stepdad, Stan Tequila's book on Minnesota birds came up on the same page.
Right.
Customers who bought this, well, so, you know, it's only helping. Your book, Matt, is only helping other field guides that are already out there. So. You're doing everybody a great service.
Thank you. That's music to my ears. That's really, I can sleep well tonight.
Right. Yeah. Our Stan said, sounds funny.
Yeah. I think he'd get a charge out of it without a doubt.
I really hope Stan enjoys it.
Yeah. We'll have to just send him a book, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we did interview him last summer, and he explained all kinds of things about birds that we didn't know. Like, for instance, going back to the shit-headed cowbird and that they lay their eggs in other nests, you know. And I think in another descriptions, you talk about how the dumb Western bluebird, I'm not going to read the whole thing here, but, you know, the poor things just can't get a break. Western bluebirds appear to form monogamous pairs each year, but in genetic studies, 45% of nests had young that were not fathered by the male partner. Son of a bitch can't catch a break. That's hilarious. Well, what Stan explained to us is that, you know, there's something called extra pair copulation. Have you heard of that? Mm-hmm. It's just part of the whole strength,
survival of the species.
Yeah, survival of the species. So it's common with many birds that the female will copulate with more than one male bird. So chances are that there are multiple families in one nest. So there you go.
That's right.
Not just birds, but that was a big part of the fun of writing the book. And I decided early on that I want it to be funny and not too serious, but I there's no like wrong information in there.
Right.
Like it's really clear. It's like fact. Bluebirds are assholes, right? Like it's clearly that's an opinion. So a lot of times I'll label what is obviously an opinion as a fact. But when I get into the actual facts, it's like, I want to include something about the birds, and it's not, because I felt like it needed to be educational. I mean, if you want to read all sorts of science and stuff about birds, there's plenty of like real ornithologists and real naturalists who can instruct you better than I can. I mean, I'm a talented amateur, I guess. And if you want to see great bird art, James Audubon already painted all those birds like 150 years ago, and they're gorgeous, right? So I didn't want to try to do that, but I wanted to include real stuff. But I used that as the basis for the humor, because I looked at each bird and basically said, what's interesting about this bird? And then if you anthropomorphize it, you know, if this bird were a person, what kind of person would that be? Like,
yeah.
What kind of person would just like basically like the cowbird, right? It's like, it'd be like the equivalent of taking some dumb person's baby and just throwing it in the yard right. And then dropping your baby off to be raised. And it's like, it's a legit evolutionary strategy, but we as people would be like, you're a jerk for doing that, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what this guy just takes birds personally. This guy, I say, me, I guess, takes birds personally right. As though like they would make the same decisions that humans would. And that often does make them jerks. Like if a human pooped on your car hood,
right.
You would hate that.
I think I lived next to that person at one point. not for long after that, but yeah.
Yeah, that kind of personification.
Jerk might have been a little soft for some of the comments, but yeah, no, without a doubt. There was one piece I was just going to say. You were kind of inspired into this greatness by a fourth grade teacher. You know, there's a there's a English naturalist I love to read. Guy's name is Roger Deakin, and he wrote some really cool books. But that was his whole basis, was like, well, I had this wonderful teacher at one point who, you know, taught us about the outdoors world we went out in the outdoors world and did field studies and all that kind of stuff. You know, I was like, probably the same wet shoes and, oh God, I'm getting tired of this. But, you know, I mean, they did all this great work, and then that became his passion, you know, and that's exactly what worked for him is the same that worked for you. So that's pretty cool. I was going to ask too, Matt, you know, a denizen of the Puget Sound area, is there a particular bird you see an awful lot of that is just sort of like the almost spokesbird for the Puget Sound area, the Seattle area? Is there something? I mean, I've spent some time in Seattle and saw some eagles and thought that was pretty cool, you know, and the various seabirds and things. But is there something that, you know, it's
yeah. What's pooping on your deck?
Yeah, what's
right
pooping
now,
on your deck?
Everything's pooping on my deck. So let me tell you. So there's a few things. I mean, it's hard to pick one. I mean, to me, growing up, it was the black-capped chickadee. That's the bird I wanted to do. And part of that was because they're ever present, mm-hmm. right? And they're non-migratory, so they're around all year long.
Yeah.
And so, like, to me, that has always been sort of the quintessential, like my youth growing up in the Northwest bird, and they're everywhere in the Northwest. I mean, they're from Canada they're everywhere.
Right.
It's like everybody's backyard bird. It seemed really personal to me. It's like, yeah, we have these amazing birds called chickadees. And other people are like, yeah, we have those in, you know, Minnesota too. So, oh really? So, but I think, you know, the ones, so what I've been seeing a lot of lately here, which is, and this is a new occurrence, is the California scrub jay.
Oh wow!
Okay. And its range—it used to range up to middle of Oregon, but with global warming, they're now coming further north. And now, so now there's another bird yelling at me in my yard. they're like every—they look different, but they're like every other jay in the world. Screeching. They're basically just mad at you all the time. Right? It's like, you're in the wrong place. What are you doing over there? Stay away from my nuts. That sort of thing. And so. So there's that, but I do see, you know, I'm close to the water and I do see a lot of eagles. I've been seeing some osprey, lately. I had a really cool experience. I was, out having some lunch with my mom. We were at a waterfront restaurant and they had these, you know, big floor to ceiling windows right on, you know, facing the water there. Yeah. And this osprey, well, we were watching some ducks, which was super boring. But then suddenly this osprey decided that maybe there were some fish there.
Sure.
You know, and usually when you see them, they're perched way the hell up on top of something, or they're swooping by at about 120 miles an hour. You never get a good look at them. But this one, there was some kind of wind coming off the land toward the water, because it came down and it basically just soared about 10 feet in front of the window for about a minute.
Oh, wow.
Just... And it was just, it's looking down in the water and it's just there. And it's like, this is like when you see that photograph, that perfect photograph from below of the osprey that somebody took with the telephoto lens, and you can see everything perfectly. And it's got its wings out and its talons down. But it was in real life and it was just, and I've never seen that before close up. I've seen they go over me all the time. And sometimes you pick them out and you're like, is that an eagle or an osprey, or could be a seagull? I don't, we see a lot of seagulls too. So. But yeah, that's been exciting. But it's spring. Well, I guess summer now, actually, here. And this is a good time for, there's just tons of birds everywhere. So if you're near any sort of woodsy, foresty area, and I am, it's a fun time if you're into it, I guess. If you're irritated by birds, it's a terrible time of year.
So. Well, tell us too about, here in the Midwest and Minnesota, we've got all these lakes and our podcast, the Cabin Country Podcast. There are a lot of us that like to spend time going to cabins or camping. What's kind of the outdoor scene like in the Seattle area? I mean, do people have a lot of cabins or cottages or?
Those who can afford it do it here too. And that in the Seattle, Tacoma metropolitan area where I am, at most you're like a 45-minute drive from some serious woods. And actually with traffic now, it's more like an hour and a half.
I remember Seattle's traffic.
It's pretty close, but a lot of people have got little places on there. There are a ton of tiny little islands throughout the Puget Sound. So you have these sort of, if you kind of think of like Washington State, the side that's connected to the continent is there. That's like Eastern Washington. And then you get down, you get across the mountains into Western Washington. It's sort of split down the middle. Western Washington split down the middle by this craggy inlet that goes for miles and miles and miles. And, and it's connected to the open sea. It's I think it averages like 450 feet deep, but it's 900 feet deep in places. Right. So like it's a serious water.
Right.
Yeah. It's not technically open ocean, but there's some pretty big stretches and there are all these islands, the San Juan Islands are up here and they're beautiful. And there's tiny little islands. Some of them are bigger and there's easy access to them by ferry or whatever. And some of them are smaller. You can only get to them by boat. And if you're like super cool, you've got a boat and you can get to one of those little islands and you have got, you've got a little place there. People do, there's tons of woods with the Olympic Peninsula. Sure. So for, you go further west past, the other side of the Puget Sound, you've got the Olympic Peninsula.
Yeah.
And there's a huge, huge rainforest out there, which is fantastic for birding, but just amazing to be out in. It's like old growth rainforest and it's marine temperate zone. So, I say rainforest and some people think of like South America. It's not like that, but like these huge trees that are impossibly large and moss hanging down hundreds of feet and it's got its own ecosystem and it's really cool. So some people have got cabins out in that area, but a lot of people just camp, like tent camping. There are a lot of state parks and things that people like to go out to, and we're for the 30 odd days a year here that it is not raining, it's a great time to camp. But that one of the huge benefits is our mosquitoes are much smaller than yours. So I watched your creepy crawly episode and it reminded me of summers in my childhood, like being having my parent, every time I came in the house, hold on, you got to do a tick check. You don't worry about that so much out here. Certain areas, weather and times of year, you might a little bit, but there's not very much that's going to bite you out here. I mean, unless a cougar gets up behind you, I guess, and you're small.
Oh, cougars. Well,
I just remember driving up out of Seattle and it really felt like we were driving up out of Seattle and headed towards those big old growth forests and Snoqualmie Falls,
This
is about the time Twin Peaks was a big deal. And I was hooked in and I was like, I got to go see Snoqualmie Falls. Oh my gosh. There it was.
Did you get pie at the place?
I didn't get any pie, but I had the world's biggest coffee that was, Starless and Bible Black and hot. Yeah, it was wonderful.
You mean at the Double R Diner or the...
Whatever. I mean, everything was riffing off Twin Peaks at that point. And it was like...
Our good friend Buck Fielding was... Maybe it was last year. He was sending me shots of the inside of that diner. Oh, my God, I can't believe I'm here. We're kind of big Twin Peaks fans over here. So,
amazing. The size of those trees is incredible. It's just crazy how you get away from... But then trying to get back into Seattle at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday and just sitting in traffic for like an hour and a half going, where are all these people coming from? And you kind of forget that, road building is sort of limited by the sound and, and it's a big city and a beautiful one. I love Seattle. I've been there probably 3 or 4 times on various trips for various lengths of time. And every time I'm there, Matt, it's sunny and beautiful. And you can see, Rainier off in the distance. And I'm like, I think it's all a big pitch. all this rain they keep talking about just to keep people out of here, quite frankly.
You've been lucky. It's just, it was raining all the other days that you weren't here. Yeah. you know, it rains a lot here. Yeah. Like, I don't know when you've come, but I got to tell you, everything between about well, so we used to like, if this has changed a little bit, I think, in the last few years with weather trends, but we used to like to say that that summer starts, it stops raining on the 5th of July, basically, because it always rains through your 4th of July celebration, right. And then it gets nice. And then that lasts until basically mid-October, and then the rest of the time, it's just dreary and rainy and cold. And I grew up here, this is hard on my wife. She gets so... you know, just like she just gets tired of it.
Yeah.
And to me, it's like, oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Like I love summertime. Summer is great. But those first when fall creeps in and we start getting those overcast days, and it's like a great big cloud blanket that I'm pulling over me. And like, it's like, God, oh, I can get my flannel shirt out again. I can get my sweaters out again.
Awesome.
I can put my barn jacket on when I go outside. Sure. And it just feels, it feels weird to me if it doesn't rain for long enough here. But it's unbearably hot right now. It's like 78 degrees outside.
Oh, so. Whoa. Holy smokes.
I just got back from North Carolina. I'm like, the North Carolinians would be looking for their down jackets if they've ever seen 78 degrees. My goodness. But I on that wavelength, I had a good friend who grew up in, I want to say the town was called Seaside, Oregon. And he talked about reaching into his sweater drawer for that same time of year. Yeah. And, finding small mushrooms growing on some of his sweaters. It was so humid all the time. It was just so damp, you know. And he said, we had, you know, mosses growing inside one of the corners of one of the rooms. We had to keep cleaning that off. And I was like, I you know, Midwest, we're thinking black mold. I'm like, oh, good Lord. Said, no. It was just, you know, a little bit of moss. It's okay. No big deal. Just scrape it off. And he too had a father that was a professor, studied shellfish and, you know, sea coast kind of shellfish environments. So it's like, you just got used to it, you know, knock the little tiny mushrooms off your sweater and make sure it doesn't smell too bad and put it on. You're good.
Yeah. It's a gorgeous environment. And you know, one of the things that I love about Washington in general, not just the Puget Sound region, is that we've got everything. We've got super high mountains. So you have alpine, you've got huge, deep, dark forest, you've got rolling hills. You get over into eastern Washington, we have straight up desert.
Yeah.
In a 5-hour period, I could be in a desert that looks like a Sergio Leone movie.
Wow.
and then you drive west across the Cascades and you dip down into a rainstorm, you know, and it's Twin Peaks there, right? And then you go another, you know, couple of hours and you're on the ocean, you're on the Pacific Ocean, you know, or on an island or whatever. So you've got the little like seaside ocean cottage getaways.
Right.
Those are amazing. You've got all the islands. I had the good fortune to stay in this gorgeous little cabin on a local island here. It was amazing. It was like it's like a connected to land. Like the first 10 feet is on land and then the rest is on stilts. And we have these crazy double tides on the Puget Sound. You have a high tide, a low high tide, a high low tide, and a low low tide.
Wow.
And because you've got enormous amount of water rushing out of the mountains, and then you've got the coastal tides, and then you have all these inlets that sort of like forces water around and stuff. So it's nuts. If you're trying to boat, you really have to plan your,
right.
You know, it's like it took us 6 hours to go that direction and 2 hours to get back, unless we do it a half an hour later, in which case it's totally different.
Right.
But it was great because you could hear the tides rushing in underneath the bedroom there and stuff. And you're over rocks the night, you wake up the next day and you're over water. And so that's amazing. But I've also stayed in amazing, like we've got that classic cedar log cabin out in the woods sort of cabin too. So we've got lots, and it's all cabin country. You know, you just get basically an hour from any city. And you're either in cabin country or you're in farm country, basically.
Right. Huh. Oh, that sounds great.
Well, yeah, cabin country out in the Pacific Northwest. I have to
a different animal, but the same core. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Without a doubt.
What else can we ask? Anything we're forgetting, Matt? That we should.
You could ask me about my next book.
Yes,
that's
what
true.
What is the next book?
just brand new? Has it even has it been released yet?
I'm thinking those forests. I'm thinking you got a big dumb mammals book coming out at some point.
Well, actually, so the Field Guide to Dumb Birds in North America has done really well. It's been really popular. People love it. And so I thought, naturally, I need to make this real for everyone. So I did a book called The Field Guide to Dumb Birds of the Whole Stupid World. and so this is just, it just takes it outside of the North American continent.
Sure.
And similar format, similar art, similar writing. But all new birds, and I've got birds from every continent in there and some new maps.
Excellent.
And all kinds of new stuff. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It comes out October 5th. You can pre-order it now in certain places like Amazon, indiebook.org. Go to your local bookstore and tell them you want a copy when it's ready, and they'll order it for you. But that'll be fun. And then following that, I don't have a on shelf date yet, but there will be an actual bird field guide, or excuse me, a bird journal for people who want to keep their own bird journal and do their own shitty drawings of birds. And it'll be full of there's snarky quotes and some tips on drawing birds and stuff like that. But I mean, largely it'll be a legit journal. So that'll be kind of like the 3-book series, I think. And a lot of people don't know this, but there's actually a desk calendar too.
Well, there is.
It's a little late to order. I mean, you can, if you want to, I highly recommend the 2021 calendar. You can still get half a year out of it almost. But there's a 2022 calendar coming out, and that is also available for pre-order now. I think it ships maybe later in July. I'm not sure. And that's just a little one-off. It's like one of those little tear-off daily thing. And
absolutely.
Little pieces, little bits.
A stupid new bird for every stupid new day.
Just about.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to apologize, Matt, and apologize to our listeners that we didn't get this episode made before Father's Day. We could have had a big push for you, Matt, but Christmas is just around the corner.
Holiday season is right around the corner.
That's right. So you've got the North American.
And then surly Uncle Earl.
The whole dumb world.
Without a doubt.
If any of your listeners forgot to get their father's birthday or Father's Day gift this year, this would be a great thing to do. Yeah. And to show your love through foul language.
Right, right. It's a little bit belated, and here you go.
Yeah.
Here it is.
One other thing I was going to ask is, if you think that the humor would be lost in translation if you were to do an audiobook version of this, it probably wouldn't, because you got to see the drawings, you know. I mean, it's kind of about the drawings.
Video journal or something.
I imagine it, like, I think we're probably about the same age. And I grew up on those. You had the little orange record player.
Oh, yeah.
And you put the record on, and then there was the booklet, and you would, you know, and it's like, it would make the little noise.
Boop, yeah.
And you'd turn the page, and it would be like, it's like the $6 million man versus evil Santa Claus or whatever. Right. And you're going through it, and then you have to flip the record. Like, I think that would be the perfect format for this, where it's just the pictures, and then it just, like, some grizzled guy is like, and screw this bird.
Oh, yeah.
Turn the page.
That sounds hilarious.
Yeah, that'd be good. No, you know, I've had a couple of people approach me about audiobook stuff, and, you know, I'll usually pass that on to my publisher, because technically I'm obligated to do that, but it would go through them anyway, I should say. And so there's been some talk of it, and I don't know what will come of that. I'd love to see an audio version. I would like Christopher Walken to read it.
Oh God, that would be hilarious.
I don't know if he's available or what's the deal, but if Mr. Walken, if you're out there, I would love for you to read my book.
I'm loving the idea of the old classic the film strips that they used to show in class, and the film strip was so old, everything was turning various shades of kind of maroon, mahogany, and yellow, you know.
Beep,
and turn it, and there's the,
you know, this could be ripe for a Mutual of Omaha Wild Kingdom sort of approach. I would love to see it shot on like really bad film stock, literally from the 70s. And
I'm staying back by the truck while Jim tries to wrestle the
chickadee.
He's chasing the doofus hummingbird. Not having great success here, but he's got a net.
Well, we'll see what we can do as part of this show to further exemplify the greatness of this book, The Field Guide.
Yeah, I'm hoping you don't mind, Matt, if we pimp it up a little bit on the show.
I don't mind at all.
We would love to get the word out there that this is something that everybody ought to have on the coffee table, by God.
I love the attention. It turns out that I like being an author. It's funny, like being an author and being a writer are two different things. And my publicist and my agent are both constantly telling me how nice it is that I actually like to talk to people.
Right.
A lot of authors, they're like, I read a book and now everybody go read it. And somebody says like, yeah, can you be on this podcast or do you want to do the signing or whatever? And I guess they don't like that.
Right.
And I think it's fun. I like people. I like talking to people and I like the attention. Let's be honest.
Without a doubt.
Well, that's cool. I've no doubt that you're going to be a happily busy guy for the next several years. So
I would think.
Thanks a ton for spending your time with us here.
Indeed, it's been great having you.
My pleasure.
We're not done talking up your book. That's for sure.
Thanks so much for having me on your show. It's really fun. Let's do it again sometime.
Absolutely.
Excellent.
Absolutely. Well, that was a wonderful interview, Fudd. There was a lot of great insight there from Matt.
I have to admit, I for some reason thought that Matt himself would be just kind of as cranky as the style that he writes in his books.
Right.
But quite the opposite. He's a wonderfully nice guy. And it's just kind of a characterization, the idea of an angry artist just kind of like, scribbling.
Character he goes into, absolutely.
Excellent stuff. So thanks so much, Matt, for a great interview and spending some of your valuable time.
But it was so much fun, too, to hear that there's, a cabin country of the Pacific Northwest, too.
Yeah.
It takes on so many different phases.
Yeah.
So much to see, so much to do, and so many different aspects of cabin life. And a wonderfully conversant gentleman, which after you've read the book, all you can think is like the sort of the Archie Bunker of outdoors life here, but a true artist and creative writer, and he had me fooled.
Yeah.
He had me fooled. I was like, this is a guy who has several 10 and 12 gauges sitting around the cabin,
right,
fully loaded, and a binocular pair waiting, and no, he's actually a great fan of the outdoor life as well. He just, this was an avenue for creativity that he really made his own. So that was so much fun.
And the book is easy to find. You can find it on Amazon, The Field Guide to Dumb Birds of North America. And his brand new one, The Field Guide to Dumb Birds of the Whole Stupid World.
The Whole Stupid World. So birds, maybe you're going
to
see
in Europe.
I can't
wait to get that one too.
North Africa, who knows,
Right.
Welcome to Australia.
Well, and you and I are going to have, we're kind of behind this year.
A little behind schedule.
Summer trip.
That's all right. We're going to get up there and
kind of
stop one for me. We'll be the corner store and talking about a fishing license. I was going to get that taken care of. I was going to get that taken because I need a license to sit in your tracker on the dock and cast about 2,500 times and catch several pounds of weeds.
Of salad.
Yeah. But we do things by the book around here.
That's right.
My gosh, you never know.
It's our
smallmouth might end up on the hook of one of my jitterbugs. And,
we'll see.
Right?
We'll see. Or maybe the chipmunk lure.
The chipmunk will finally earn its keep.
Yeah, we'll give that a try and listen to a radio show or two.
Without
and,
a doubt.
Hopefully
the fire
it won't
ring,
be
a little Mitt's coffee.
Too hot, Still
hot,
still enjoy some hot coffee, no matter how hot it gets up there.
It's never too hot for a cup of mints.
That's right.
Too hot for a cup of mints. Or five.
Yeah. Yeah.
Indeed.
Well, excellent. Well, thanks for hanging with us again.
That's right.
Here on the dock.
Glad to have you.
Learning about all kinds of
summers here. Get a line
birds
in the water.
Exactly.
For Pete's sake. Make it happen. All right. Well, we'll see you next time here on Cabin Country.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.